it's a working garden, a practical place. Usually there would be three scenarios if the Bible talks about a garden. It would be an olive grove, it would be a citrus grove, or it would be a vineyard. Now we know there are two gardens mentioned in the Gospels, the Garden of Gethsemane and the garden where the tomb of Jesus was. Now the Bible tells us about Gethsemane. It says that Jesus crossed the Kidron Valley to an olive grove. Have you visited it?
Yes.
Yeah. It's been maintained, that area, as an olive grove today. But you know, there's not one word in the Gospels that tell us what was growing in that garden where the tomb of Jesus was. And that's why I wanted you to see this below us here, this wine press down here. Now, a lot of people did. If you haven't seen it, you'll have an opportunity later, because you'll be coming back here to have your meeting with the other part of your party. You'll be coming here after we've been down at the tomb. The archaeologists tell us that this wine press was here at the time of Jesus. And this is how they would have used it. They would have laid down straw. They would have put the grapes on top of the straw. And then Lucille Ball style, they would have trampled the grapes. Now, the straw acts like a filter. All the pulp, the skin, the seeds get caught up in the straw, but the grape juice can sink through the straw and runs into the big tank at the bottom here. Now, in one of his parables, Jesus mentioned a wine press. In Matthew 21, at verse 33, he said, "A man planted a vineyard. Around it he built a wall," some translations say a hedge, "and in it he dug his wine press." In other words, you dig the wine press where you're growing the grapes that you're going to process in it. And this is a large wine press, so a lot of grapes would have been processed down here. So the archaeologists believe this garden at the time of Jesus was a vineyard here. But there's a problem for any garden in Jerusalem. It stops raining here around about April. It won't rain now, the years I've lived here, till perhaps November. What the Bible calls the former rain, the latter rain. Between these two P's, there's a drought. And that's why all over this ancient land, they dug water cisterns. When the rain falls, they try to catch it and store it. Have you seen any water cisterns on your trip?
Yeah.
Masada?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, huge one. The third largest cistern ever found in the Jerusalem area is right here in this garden, and it's immediately below where the other group from your party are sitting. Right under there. Now we'll have a look at it, we'll have a look into it. The cistern in our garden holds up to 1 million litres. 250,000 gallons in the cistern here. But this picture of it was taken from the inside, just to give you an idea of the scale of it, and you can see what an amazing structure it is. I don't know if you can see it clearly. There's two or three of these pictures around on posts so you can get a good view. I'll do my best here, because they had to make this. This is solid rock here. They would start at the top and cut out the rock and then extend. It probably took 25, 30 years to extend it to this size. During the winter when it rains, the rainwater runs off the hill, feeds into the cistern, we see the water level go up, and we use it during the dry weather, and we watered the garden this morning from this cistern. We use it during the summer. I should add that we fitted a pump, so we've taken a lot of the labor out of it. The archaeologists tell us that this cistern predates the time of Jesus. So we know how the garden could have survived back then. This could have been a flourishing vineyard because they had ample water storage to last the year round. Who owned this garden? John 19 verse 38 says it was Joseph of Arimathea went to Pontius Pilate and asked for permission to take the body of Jesus from the cross. Joseph of Arimathea. What do the Gospels tell us about him? He was rich. He was a member of the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin took a vote. Jesus was to be handed over to the Romans. The Bible tells us Joseph of Arimathea did not vote for this to happen. But it appears that he remained quiet and only identified with Jesus after the crucifixion when he went and asked Pilate for the body. Now, Matthew 27, verse 60 tells us what he did next. It says, Joseph of Arimathea took the body of Jesus, wrapped it in a clean linen cloth, and laid it in his own tomb that he had cut out of rock. So from these verses I've shared with you up to now, we know this about the tomb of Jesus. The Bible tells us it was in a garden. The garden was close to Golgotha. The tomb was cut out of solid rock, had never been used before until the day the body of Jesus was laid in it, and it belonged to Joseph of Arimathea. Now, we don't believe that Jesus owned the house. You remember he said, birds of the air have nests, foxes have holes, the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. And yet when he died, he was given a private tomb cut out of rock, a new tomb, never used before, in a rich man's garden. Many people believe that the day the body of Jesus was laid in that tomb, that one of the messianic scriptures was fulfilled. Isaiah 53 verse 9 says, he was assigned a grave with the rich in his death. The Messiah, of course. Now, when we go down to the tomb below us here, this tomb is cut out of solid rock, you'll see that. There are three other features of this tomb that are consistent with the one that we read about in the Gospels. And I'll mention that when we're down there. So we think right now you're sitting in the garden that at one time was the property of Joseph of Arimathea. Now, who owns this garden today? Back in 1893, a small group of English Christians came together. They were not from one church or one denomination. They called themselves the Garden Tomb Association, and they raised the money and bought the garden here. And they've looked after it until today. Now, this garden is all that the Garden Tomb Association owns in the whole world. They have no interests outside of this small garden here. There's no church or denomination outside owns, supports, finances the garden. It's a charity, so no one's ever asked to pay any money to come in here. We're told that approximately 7% of all the tourists who come to Israel come here. We have around 1,100 visitors every day. But no one's ever asked to pay anything to come in. But the garden is totally dependent on the visitors to keep going. It's the only finance we have is through gift boxes. When you come back for your meeting, there'll be a basket here, and if you'd like to support the work of the garden, that of course would always be welcome. Working here, we have full-time, part-time, and volunteer staff. We have folk from Canada, the USA, Holland, Norway, England, and Scotland at the present time. But the charity itself is based in England. It's an English-based charity. Okay? Now, let's go and have a look down into the cistern. We can, usually there's a shadow at this time of the day, and we can see right to the bottom of it. And then we may have difficulty at the tomb with the numbers we have here, but we'll give it a go. Let's go.